Welcome to another edition of The Brand Called You. Today I have someone who's doing some incredible work with children and at construction sites. Sumitra Mishra, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Ashutosh.
Sumitra is the executive director of Mobile Creches and she is the country director of iPartnerIndia.org. Sumitra, tell me a little bit about your early career.
How early back you want me to go?
Whenever you started working?
I think in terms of my work, I started quite early when I was still at school, mm-hmm. when I was volunteering with old age homes okay. and children's homes. But I didn't know back then that this is what I wanted
Correct.
To do. But as I was about to leave school, it sounds cliche, but I just felt that need to work closely with children with disabilities.
Wow. Wow.
And I started writing around. Those were the days when you sent postcards and inland letters, started
Correct.
Writing around to a few institutes and got some guidance to have patience
Correct.
That I'm not ready yet. So pretty early on, I wanted to work with children with disabilities. And my family thought that I was a little crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Right after school, I started actually volunteering in a special school for
okay.
children and young people with
yeah.
disabilities.
Yeah.
So that's where I start to define my career.
Okay.
That 1 year of volunteering at that school really established
mm-hmm.
that mm-hmm. seed in me that this is what I wanted to do.
Okay. Okay.
I come from a small town,
mm-hmm.
a very conservative, big, bad joint family,
mm-hmm.
and an eldest daughter in
mm-hmm.
that family.
Mm-hmm.
So there were a lot of things that I kind of set the
Correct.
Trend,
Correct.
Opened the doors for my younger
yeah.
siblings and cousins.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things was to step out of home,
mm-hmm.
go and stay in a hostel and pursue my college studies. And that was also another defining moment
sure.
when I kind of gave that assurance to my family, including my grandparents,
mm-hmm.
that I'm really ready to go out
mm-hmm.
and study and I'll take care
mm-hmm.
of myself. And this is the work that I want to do.
Okay.
And I think that set things in motion.
Okay.
And that's how I started. And of course, then subsequently, I got trained in working with people with disabilities
mm-hmm.
and worked for almost 15 years with some very severely disabled
wow.
Children. Deafblind mm-hmm. and multisensory impaired children, and I enjoyed that work. I loved
okay.
it. It was I thrived on that
mm-hmm.
work, and by the first 5-7 years, you know that this is what you want to do. And then life took its own course, and you know, 20 years later, I'm still enjoying what I'm
wonderful,
doing.
Wonderful, wonderful. So, you know, what made you move to mobile creches, and then I'll ask you about mobile creches.
Mobile creches actually came at a very interesting time in my life. You know, all of us go through our midlife crisis.
Sure.
And a few years ago, I was thinking, well, I've done this work for 20 years, but what have I got to show in terms of lasting
mm-hmm.
change? Have I really made a difference? And as you keep growing, you keep moving far away from the field, from real communities
mm-hmm.
of people that you want to work with. You get more involved in the managerial and the management role.
Correct.
And I had that urge that maybe I have another good 10, 15 years to really
mm-hmm.
put some solid work on the ground. What do I need to do? And it was around that time that mobile creches happened in my life.
Okay.
And I felt that this was a perfect fit for me to use my experiences of working with some of the very severely disabled children and all the management role that
Correct.
I've done subsequently
mm-hmm.
to come back and go back to the ground.
Wonderful.
And Mobile Creches is an organization that's very rooted, very grounded. So
tell me a little bit about Mobile Creches. I mean, what do you do?
What does Mobile Creches
Correct.
Do? Mobile Creches works with the very young babies. We work with children primarily under 6 years of age,
mm-hmm.
the most vulnerable children. As you mentioned, children at moving with their migrating families at construction sites, at very poor urban pockets
mm-hmm.
of big cities, mostly young children of migrating workers. And what do? We basically look at children's happy, healthy childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And what does that happy, healthy childhood mean in terms of their food, nutrition, health, early education, okay. their care and protection. Okay. And how do we do this? We kind of provide these holistic environment for children at by running creches mm-hmm. and daycare centers in some of these areas.
Okay, and these would be migratory workers,
right? Yes, so that's predominantly the population that we work with. Mm-hmm. Poor families migrating from their cities in places of work to okay. From their villages looking for work in cities, and they move predominantly. Construction sector is a big mm-hmm. employer of such unskilled
Correct.
Migrating labor force.
Correct.
So we work in the construction sector, but then of course all the city makers or mm-hmm. domestic workers, mm-hmm. street vendors, home-based workers, factory workers, are all women working in mm-hmm. these various industries. And when women are working, mm-hmm. one of Mobile Crush's attempt is to enable women workers to have decent work, decent quality of life. Mm-hmm. And to do that, then therefore we take care of their children mm-hmm. as they're away at work.
Wonderful. So tell me, what are the challenges that you face? Let's start with several people you interact with, or I can say they're stakeholders in Mobile Crushes. Let's start with builders. How open are builders to give you area and maybe even to fund you?
interesting. Within the construction sector, the law certainly mandates the builders mm-hmm. to provide for creches and daycare.
Oh, so it's a part of the law?
It's a part of
Wonderful.
The law.
Okay.
And therefore, there is an obligation on the builders mm-hmm. to provide this. Yet, I don't think the law is what is an incentive for mm-hmm. the builders to provide this kind of support to children of their workers. What motivates some of the builders? I think for many of our builder community, builder partners, it's the feeling of doing something good. They come from that they would mm-hmm. like to help. It's also the risk management, that they do not want accidents to happen to children at their site. And some builders also understand that it helps them to retain more women,
yeah.
Reduce their absenteeism from work, mm-hmm. and the attrition rates are also managed. So there are a combination of factors. But then there are also many things that prevent them from doing it. For example, I mean, buildings like this is their core job. They don't have the knowledge or the wherewithal to run programs for mm-hmm. children. So lack of that knowledge also is a disincentive, okay. and lack of awareness where to go and find that expertise also prevents mm-hmm. them. And also there isn't an additional incentive if they're running this.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of recognition or in terms of any other advantage from the industry. So there are many bottlenecks also.
Okay.
But I mean, looking at our work over the last 50 years, primarily mm-hmm. with the builder community, I think we've managed to make some good inroads to an extent that now some of our old partners do call us
mm-hmm.
that they are about to set up a new project and there's a site coming up and they want Mobile Crushes to come
amazing.
And run those crushes. So there is a turnaround that
amazing.
We see.
That's amazing. And how do the parents of these children who are working at the site or the location, how do they react to all the good work you are doing?
We have to understand that these are extremely poor families.
Correct.
Survival is their first need. Roti, kapda, makan is what has driven them from their villages. Children and nurturing care for children is not something that is their priority. And therefore, that is not the first thing that they look for when they move out from their villages to these work sites. So our work with the families actually begins much early, even before children start coming to
okay.
these centers, mm-hmm. about sensitizing them about why a balanced diet is important, why clean hands are important, why safe drinking water is important, and how it will help you as parents to support your children.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of that program happens, a lot of that engagement happens with families. But eventually also we have many cases, Ashutosh,
mm-hmm.
where you go to a site and you meet a mother and the mother tells you, दीदी आपको याद नहीं है, डोंट यू रिमेम्बर मी इन दैट सेंटर ड्यूरिंग दैट बिल्डर्स साइट माई एल्डर चाइल्ड हैड कम टू योर सेंटर, सो नाउ आई हैव कम लुकिंग फॉर अ साइट वेयर आई नो दैट मोबाइल क्रशेस विल हैव अ सेंटर, नाउ माई यंगर डॉटर इज कमिंग हियर. सो फैमिलीज डू हैव दैट रिकॉग्निशन एंड देन वंस दे आर सेट ऑन दैट पार्ट दे सीक दोस सर्विसेज एंड दे आस्क फॉर दोस सर्विसेज आल्सो.
सो टेल मी, यू नो, you mentioned that you handle children from the time they are born till the time they are six.
Yeah.
How do you handle such a wide disparity of ages? You know, at least 4, 5, 6, the child, even when they go to kindergarten or school, there is some kind of facility available. But for a newborn child, isn't it a huge responsibility on you?
Ashutosh, as per the law, we are supposed to run creches from 6 month old babies to six years and sometimes even above six years. But that's not the reality. We have babies as young as 2 weeks old coming to our centers because moms have to go for working.
Correct.
They don't have the luxury of waiting for 6 months till the child is fairly old. So we have babies very young. What's the biggest challenge and how do we address this? Of course, children don't have a language yet to tell where they are discomforted or in pain. And children are toddlers. They will play. They will be naughty. And they're also growing very fast. I think at the center of this kind of wide range of children and that period when children are growing so fast and they need the support is our trained creche worker.
Okay.
Mobile creches invest very heavily in its workforce,
training
our center people, whether it's to work with the creche babies that we call up to 2 years of age, or the preschool children between 2.5, 3 to 6 years of age, and also sick children who are above 6 years who are ready to go to school, and we are bridging the distance between their homes and their schools. So they are trained in various aspects of child development, in child protection, in how to respond to accidents and emergencies, and mostly how to love and care, how to provide that nurturing care when children are with them.
Amazing. So tell me, you know, I served on the board of GAVI, which is a multilateral agency of vaccination in Geneva for many years. Health needs of children, especially 6 month upwards, are well defined, of course, but getting that implemented, whole vaccination schedule implemented, is a challenge. And India is one of the major defaulters on vaccination in the world. How do you handle the health of young children?
good question, Ashutosh. That is the age when their health needs are most critical.
Correct.
And to keep a child healthy at that age will have long-term life outcomes during adult life. Yet, the biggest challenge is the migratory nature of these families. Because they're migrating, they have already been cut off from the system within their villages, out of the health system, out of any kind of protection, social entitlement system. And then they're in construction sites or in far out of the city kind of slums where the system is not present or is very fragile. One of the ways in which we work is, of course, when we run our centers to track every individual child in terms of their immunization schedules, in terms of their health checkups, and even referrals for severe and acute malnutrition also. But unfortunately, when they move from site to site, there tends to be a gap. And all we can do is to educate and inform the families about what the child needs at what age and how to seek that support through the health centers, through the A&M workers, the ASHA workers, and the Anganwadi centers that they have access to. Interestingly, we just recently did a study within the city of Delhi, some of the slum pockets, and the study says that almost 10% of families staying in slums of Delhi have no clue about whether their 6-year-old children have completed their immunization schedule.
Amazing.
And almost 8 to 10% of the children haven't completed despite having the information.
Leaving them very, very vulnerable.
And these are the most vulnerable children.
I agree. So, you know, you mentioned that you've just finished 50 years. I think last year you celebrated your 50th anniversary, golden anniversary. Do you have any statistics on how many children you have looked after over the years?
Well,
Broad numbers.
Yeah, yeah. Broad, don't ask me for MIS around numbers.
Maybe a few thousand or maybe much more.
We have around 870,000.
870,000, and you made a difference in their lives.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's an estimate from the first 25 years, and then later in the last 25 years, some data keeping. But yes, we looking at around 875.
Close to a million children have been looked after by mobile.
Yes, certainly.
Incredible.
Certainly.
More power to all of you. It's amazing.
It's the people on the ground, the crash teams that are the most powerful people in reaching out to the children. So it's all credit to them.
I agree with you. And one more question for mobile crashes before I move on. How do you define the success of an organization like mobile crashes? You know, is it based on number of children? Is it based on how much money you've raised? Is it based on how many sites you're working in? What kind of success parameters can be defined in the social sector?
For mobile crèches, the measure of success is very clear, Ashutosh. It's about enabling children and their families to access their right to early childhood education, early childhood development. We believe that as soon as a child is born, the child is a citizen of India and therefore has the right to health, nutrition, education, safety, protection, everything that the country is obligated to provide to young children. And therefore, how do we ensure that whether it is the builder or it is the government or it is the families or it is organizations like mobile crèches, multiple stakeholders around the child do their duty of enabling that the child is growing in a safe, secure, well looked after environment. And for mobile crèches, it has never been numbers or balance sheet figures. But also, besides the children and their access to rights and entitlements, I would say that as an organization, our measure of success has been our people. The average tenure of a mobile crèche team member is 20 to 25 years. People come, people stay. There's something about the organization that nests people, allows them to grow, flourish, be themselves, discover themselves. And in the process, the organization grows.
Amazing. So, you know, this takes me back to a comment made by Mrs. Graca Machel, who was Mrs. Mandela, when she was chairperson of GAD. And a lot of discussions were going on around the board on how much money will be raised and what will happen. And she just kept on saying, forget the amount of money. This organization is all about the children and nothing else matters.
And it's similar here. You know that Mobile Crèches was founded by a team of very Gandhian women. For them, that value system that they have transferred over generations is retained within the organization. It's about somewhere about seva, but more than that, it's about nation building. This organization is towards nation building by looking after its youngest citizens.
So, Sumitra, I'm going to move to a few questions for you personally now. Over the years, have you had any people who had a strong influence on you? And if yes, what have you learned from them?
You know, this is a typical question that's asked, and I've had been very fortunate and very blessed through my life to have many people who've influenced, starting from my mother. As I said, in a big joint family, she was my ally to break open some of these doors for me. And of course, various colleagues, seniors who've influenced me throughout and have helped me very generously to grow, learn and understand. But if I look back, I think it's, I would remember two very brave mothers of very severely disabled children. One woman, Bhagyashree Dengle, from a village in Bhagyashree, from a village in close to Nasik, who had a totally deafblind boy, 10 years old, when I met her, who wouldn't have a stitch of cloth on him and who would be very violent on himself and everyone around. And to go and visit that mother in her house and to see her doing her farm work, her cooking, her cleaning, and getting beaten and bruised by this boy, and so much love and patience to handle him, to respond, to take care of him. And the 4 or 5 years that I worked closely with her, she, from that village, from the first exposure to someone ready to help her child, she grew to become the president of the Parents Association, inspiring other family members. So incredible heroism there. And the second woman, if I take very quickly, tell you, when I was working with the blind school here in Delhi, and we had a mom who worked as an assistant or as a helper in the unit, and her young teenage daughter used to come to the center, again blind, intellectually impaired, severely disabled. Unfortunately, one day she was sexually assaulted by a family member who stayed in their house. She came running, and we did everything that we could to help her in terms of health, immediate support, all of the checkup and treatment and everything. And then a week later, she said to me that I want to file an FIR and I want to report this case. And Ashutosh, this was 20 years later, I did not have the guts to help her. I discouraged her. That why go through, you have so much. She went on to file that FIR and she went on to win that case. And it gives me goose flesh. That's the courage. That's where I learn from. Now, these are women who have so little and yet so much resilience and power in them. And I've met so many such people that, you know, it's humbling.
So let me move on. You know, 20 years in looking after so many diverse people and giving back yourself to such an amazing community. What would be three words that define you?
Wow. courage. No matter what. Do the right thing. Tenacity. I'm stubborn. I hold on. I think kindness. Be kind, be gentle. You don't have to push and be aggressive in getting there. I think,
I think that's how people would see. You know, I like the first two very much, but kindness, it must be quite evident with the kind of work that you do.
I guess you cannot do this work without empathy, without putting yourself in another person's place and seeing the world, trying to see the world through their eyes.
Wonderful. So my next question to you is on failure. And I ask this question from everybody. One, because I want to learn more about failure. And second, a little selfish. I've got a new book that I'm working on failure. And I have a hypothesis, which is that Indian parents don't teach children that it's okay to fail. That's why everyone says, first aana hai, sabse aage jao, etc., etc. And that manifests itself in our behavior. And yet, all of us fail. So my question to you is, what have been some of your learnings from possibly your mistakes or your failures?
I think at this stage, Ashutosh, my biggest sense of failure is that I have spent too much time trying to be successful. I have been too hard on myself, defining success for myself, and in the process setting sometimes unreasonable expectations, both from myself but also transmitting that to people around me, whether it's family or my young colleagues around me. And I did say kindness to you earlier, but I don't think it's a very kind thing to do to have those standards and keep pushing towards that. I think I sometimes confuse my role as a leader and then to step back and say, just relax, it's okay to fail. Handling that failure has been my biggest failure.
Amazing. Thank you for such an honest answer. Next question to you is, on work-life balance. You know, the kind of work that you are doing must be taking a lot out of you. How do you manage your work-life balance?
I don't.
Okay.
I don't.
You're working all the time.
I don't have a work-life balance. I am a bad example for work-life balance. As I just mentioned, I drive myself too hard.
Yeah.
And I realize that that's not the way to look at the world more holistically, being more grounded.
Okay.
And but this, also I want to mention that sometimes as a woman, you have to just do a bit more, a little harder to establish yourself and to prove yourself. And I have taken that too far. I don't have a work-life balance.
Okay. So that is a great segue to my next question, which will be my last question to you. And that is on gender balance. You'd mentioned that women have to work much harder. And I've always believed, and I worked with, you know, in Guardian, I had 30% of our workforce were women. And I always said women are far better, or women have far better work ethics than any of my other male colleagues. A lot of talk is going on gender balance and how important it is. You have broken the glass ceiling, you're running a big outfit. What are your thoughts on gender balance? And how can we increase the implementation of more women at work?
It's a no-brainer that we need more women at work, and we need more women in leadership positions. But my feeling is that we can't begin by working on gender balance at work and hoping that we have more women at work unless we start from the very start. Look at our female feticide rates. Look at our dropout rates of girls falling out of school. Look at our higher education college enrollment rates of girls. Unless we create a pipeline of women, girls across every sector, we can't hope to have women at work. And therefore, it's important to dismantle this whole patriarchal thing about women having a certain place in society, start from some of those structural things, but also create an environment that enables more women. We have to see more women in buses. We have to see more women in public places. We have to see more women out in the streets out at nights. We have to have women out, and that will gradually push more and more women to the work and to leadership roles and to growing and, you know, leading things from the front.
I agree with you. So, Sumitra, thank you very much. It's been an absolute honor and a pleasure to have you here. And I'm sure I'll keep seeing Mobile Crushers grow from strength to strength.
Thank you very much, Ashutosh. It was a pleasure to be here.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You podcast. Be sure to visit tbcy.in to join the conversation, access show notes, and discover fantastic bonus content. You can follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Simply search for The Brand Called You. Thank you, and see you next week.